You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the tree right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed.
Hi.
But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced that I have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice Wallace, what do you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Moxon Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's Walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Marco Bill, and we're on expedition. We're in the field. Before we start, though, I'd like to bring your attention to a couple of things. On our website, www.bigfootliveradio.com, we have a news story from New Hampshire. It's in a link. It's right under where it says press release. And you put in there, there's a link inside there. It'll tell you all about what's going on, what happened in New Hampshire. The second thing is we're on expedition through August. We'd like you to send us your sightings. Here are the states that we're going through. Washington, Montana, Arizona, Oklahoma, Maine, Mississippi, New Hampshire, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Rhode Island, and Utah. Join us, Finding Bigfoot with the Searching for Bigfoot team. We need your eyes and ears, folks. Do you know or have you heard of any Bigfoot sightings, activity, evidence, or stories in these areas? Please call TJ, our live capture team leader, at 606-620-6667. The Bigfoot Hotline is available 24 hours a day. And TJ, are you out there?
Oh, I'm right here, Marco. Thank you. I'm right here. Me and the team are up here in Illinois, where we let's recap a little bit. So we started off. We're working on our third week of expedition, and it's been a wonderful ride so far. We've got to meet a lot of great people. We stopped off in Arizona at the White Mountain Apache Nation, where there was some sightings. The sightings happened because a meteor crashed on their land and started a fire up in the mountains. And all the creatures that were around the mountains started coming back down into the towns. So the creatures came into there, and we got a call, so we shot down there to see what we could do. And, we saw some sign, but there really wasn't much we could do with the they had actually like NASA folks that were out there checking out the meteors, and they had that whole area cordoned off. But we got to talk to a couple folks where the creatures come down and looked through their windows while they were in their house and heard their stories and met with some news crews that were also down there and did a little ditty with them. From there, we moved up to our call in New Hampshire, and that was with our good friend Scott Lucas. We went up there to check out the sightings he's been having on his 100 acres up there. And we met up with a great guy named, Concord Monitor, did a wonderful story on us up there. And then WMUR, those links will be on our Facebook, searchingforbigfoot.com, and I'm sure they're on our website, searchingforbigfoot.com also. Well, we shot from there after we deemed it that our creatures had moved away, migratory out of the area up there in New Hampshire. Great area, but they just weren't there. We spent nights, and I'll let Mike tell you about that when I call him in later, out in the woods, what we've seen. From there, we had to get over to Rhode Island and meet up with Tommy, who was having a whole bunch of stuff going on. And when we went there, and we actually we debunked it. It wasn't any creatures that were scaring him. They were fisher cats and deer that were digging through the leaf litter, making these look like footprints, but they weren't. And the screams were coming from the fisher cats. But we were able to give him a little bit of, we calmed him down, and he realized that there wasn't any creatures up in that area. And then we got the call from Illinois, where Pam was at. And we're here now, and my goodness, it's been a roller coaster right here. We've seen some sign. We've baited up a whole bunch of stations, and two nights ago, we had something come to our bait. And let me explain to you how we hang our bait, guys. We get Coke cans, and we'll tie a thin string to it, and we'll coat the Coke can plus the concave bottom with a lot of peanut butter and spread a whole bunch of sardine oils around the tree so that it can smell it. And we'll raise it about 12 foot up, and we run the cord all the way around the tree so that nothing can see it till we tie it off on the bottom. Well, we put up our thermal cameras, and I guess we came by the next day, and we saw that the bait was gone. There were finger marks inside the can, and the bait was gone, and that something had smacked the can around the branch about three times. So we couldn't wait to get back to see that and see what the thermal images were. Hey, Mike, you out there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Why don't you explain to the people out there what happened and what we saw?
Okay. Well, we had that bait set up about 11, 12 feet in the air, and set up the thermal imager about 60 or 70 feet away in an old stump, so it was very well hidden, pointed at the bait, and we turned it on about 10 o'clock at night and went home. When we got back the next morning, we discovered that as Tommy said, TJ said, the peanut butter had been scooped out of the bottom of the can and it had been flattened, so it spun around the branch. It was very, very hot. So I eerily took the thermal imaging recorder back and charged up the batteries and started to go through the footage. And it turned out that the camera ran until almost exactly 4 o'clock in the morning. And I looked at it twice, and not a thing crossed that screen between 10 o'clock and 4 o'clock. So, unfortunately, whatever tank came and took that peanut butter was between 4 o'clock in the morning and whatever. Anyway, we went back, charged up the battery, went back, repeated that last night, And unfortunately, when we came this morning, the thing had run until, the camera this time ran until 9 o'clock in the morning. So it ran for almost 12 hours. And once again, of course, revealed nothing has happened. I'm going to turn this back to Tommy now, and he can bring you up to date to where we are at this very moment. DJ? DJ, are you there? He's not. Okay. We are now sitting at Pam's house in her front yard, and our tracker guy, Tim, is out setting up resetting the game tank we have set up in a separate area with more peanut butter, hoping to catch something there.
Can you hear me now, Mike?
Yes. Okay.
Awesome. So up here in the woods, I'll tell you, the signal gets bad. Talk about frustration, Mike. I mean, we were so excited to see what was on that camera. It was just, it was tough. And then the battery's dying. I mean, if anything could go wrong, it does. So we had three bait stations set up, and the other two stations that have the bait on them have one of our newer night vision cameras that didn't that doesn't give off the light when it flashes, and that one wasn't touched, and the third one was the same. So I'm thinking to myself, is there some kind of an extreme low frequency that maybe they're hearing and they're staying away from it? Because the thermal imager camera, you placed it up in an open old log that was probably good 40 feet away. Nevertheless, we're here. We're going to strive through it. We've checked the area out many times, many days. I want to bring Pam in. I want to let you guys listen to her and have her explain why she called us, why we came out, and we'll go with just starting that. Pam, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome, Pam. So why don't you tell the listeners out there, you know, how you got a hold of us, why you got a hold of us, and we'll go from there.
Well, it started about 5 years ago, and I've seen some weird things around the property, tall, red-looking things, and it, you know, come and went, didn't pay much attention to it. And I guess a couple months ago, all of a sudden, I'm hearing stuff around the house and pushing on the doors and making weird sounds like a wild animal or something, and couldn't figure out what was going on, and it just got more violent, and I'm going to my daughter's house, and I look up, and I see this big, tall thing looking in the window, and it takes off running and scared me by half to death. And it's just, they're like, I don't know if it was violent or what, and I thought, well, it's time to call someone in to help me with this situation.
Yes, you did. You called us.
Are you there?
I'm cutting out. I'm sorry. Can you guys hear me now? Marco?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. So Pam gave us a call, and we came out, and the reason why she called us is because we are the Searching for Bigfoot team, and we travel across the nation 6 to 10 months a year actually doing investigations, not sitting behind computers wishing we were. So, hey, just so you guys, all folks you know out there, send your resumes to BigfootTJ@Yahoo.com if you want a job. You want to travel with the team and get paid doing it. We'll look through them. We got one spot for one player left, so make sure you send those resumes to BigfootTJ@Yahoo.com. So, Pam, back to you. Why don't you explain the stories about the three different creatures, their colors, what they've been doing, and how you explained it to us in the beginning.
The first one was like a tall, skinny red one, right, you know, red hair. I was looking out my back window about 4 years ago in the snow, it was snowing, and I seen this big red thing up against the barn, and you get a good look at him, and it's like he was looking both ways to see if anybody was looking at him. So I was looking out my window, and I didn't move. I thought maybe he'd see me, and he jumped out away from the barn, and he took off like a bullet.
Whoa.
And I was like, whoa, okay, yeah, okay, what's this? And then, you know, I hear, like, dumping and banging and rocks throwing, and my dad living at the time for the past, and he's like, I hear there's something outside this window that's making noise and scaring me half to death. So, you know, I'm like, okay, Pop, I'll watch and see what's going on. So I'm out looking around. I'm And I look up on the top of my roof, and there's this big, tall, red, furry-looking thing again. And it just, it jumps off the house like it was nothing, took off running. And I was like, well, you're too big for me to chase.
Well, how tall would you say it was?
Oh, for me, no more than maybe 100 yards, if you were that far away.
No, how tall was the creature?
I would give him at least 7 feet, maybe a little more. I mean, roughly from what I could tell. He could have been taller, but I'm just going to say seven, maybe a little over seven.
Wow, and was that the male you're talking about?
He looked like he would have been a male, yeah, because, you know, he looked like he could have been a male.
Now, you mentioned you saw a female with a child. What makes you think it was a female?
Well, like I say, this one was around for like 4 years and come and go, make his little weird noises. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing different ones and bigger ones. I mean, scary big, you know. And my daughter's got a compost. We live on the same property. She's got a compost where you put, you know, stuff in there, your eggs and, you know, your vegetables for your soil, you know. And I was out there one day and there was this thing off to the right of me. My dog was barking it and took off running. And I looked up, and it was a big, tall thing, like it was holding something furry, you know, on its arm. And it took off. And I was like, okay. And then again, I was out here about 3 weeks ago, and I hear a baby crying. It sounded like a child, you know. And I'm figuring, you know, what I've seen in her arms and then everything that's going on, it had to be a female. Because, I mean, she was like holding something close to her chest. And you could tell that like a child, you know, one of them fast was a child. So, but these guys are different than the tall red one. He just looks around. These things, like, I'm sitting in my car talking to my friend, and somebody comes around the side of the house, and I think it's my roommate. It's yelling at me, and I growl and stuff. And I was like, you need to quit that. You know, I was yelling my game. I thought he was playing some game on me because he likes to play pranks. And I'm yelling at it. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to let you have it. What's wrong with you out here acting like it? So I go in the house. He's laying on the couch and he's sick. So I'm like, oh my goodness. So whatever it was yelling at me and it wasn't him. So I'm like, okay.
And that was him. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, most people would be scared, I think. But you know what, when I first met you, you weren't very fearful of them. I mean, you said to yourself you were concerned that they might do some harm to you, and I tried to let you know that, you know, most of them don't. But you, most people would be, they'd be terrified having these creatures on their property. But you've kind of like accepted them, I'm thinking. Am I pretty sure, am I pretty close?
Oh, yes, close. Very, very
you
close.
Know? Okay. Now, you know, I forgot to ask you when we first met, and I don't know why I might have asked you when we first met, but let's just so my listeners can hear. Why did you contact us? What made you call searching for Bigfoot? How did you get a hold of us? How did you find us?
I went to Google on my phone and said, looking for Sasquatch hunters, and you came right up.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
You're blessing, I'm telling you.
Have you called anybody else?
No.
So we're doing pretty good, I guess, first time out. Probably a good 10 times, 3 in the morning when this creature was making noise and whatever he was doing on the backside of your house, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Amazing.
I believe Sasquatch now. Let's put it that way. I really believe in them.
Well,
they are here.
You believe them. They're here. They're on your property, and you've allowed us to come here and help show the world that they're here and that you're not, you know. But I remember you told me, do you think I'm crazy? And I says, well, no. You know, that's what we do. You know, so, heck, it's all good. You know, some people, they just don't get it. You know, there's so many things going on this planet that we as people don't know what's happening. You know, 90% of this planet, you know, probably at 10 o'clock at night sitting in front of their TV or sleeping until the next morning. And that's when these creatures, they move. You know, they're nocturnal. They travel and feed at night. They go out and play. And the only time I've ever seen one during the daytime was when we actually were just hiking through the woods and something, and I can't say it was a Bigfoot, but after we walked out and saw the prints, I figured it was a male diverging us from the female and the baby, you know.
Wow.
You know, you've got a lot of stuff going on here. We're going to help you figure it out. I guarantee it. We're going to rebate these stations, and we're going to, well, we've got 12-hour batteries, so we're going to see what happens this time. Hey, Mike, you there?
Yes, I am.
Why don't you explain the process of how we're setting up our thermals and what we're going to be doing the rest of the night here.
Okay. We've got the bait, as you described before, hung off the little limb on the tree about 11 feet up with the Coke can with the big couple of tablespoons of peanut butter stuck to the concave bottom of it. And it's hanging down from the branch maybe 18 inches or so, not looped around it, just hanging down. And about 60 feet away, there's this very convenient stump that's all rotted, that's sort of hollowed out at the top. And the thermal imager that I'm using, it's called the View, made by FLIR, and they really make this one to put in drone. So it's very small and light, and I can tuck it in a crack in the stump, pointed at the bait, so you can really barely see it. And then down in the hole in the stump, I put the recording device, which is actually it's a Sony Nightshot camera, but it has a 12-hour battery in it, which is fully charged now. And it's one of the few cameras that has a hard drive and a video in port. So you can use it as a digital video recorder, and that's what we're doing. The View camera itself, the thermal imager, is powered by a separate lithium ion battery, and these views draw very, very little current, so that thing probably runs for 2 days. As soon as this show's over, I'm going to go back in there and make sure that the bait is still untouched from yesterday, and put this baby back in the stump and turn it on, and then I cover it up with bark so you can't see it. You could, from if you're standing at the bait and you looked at the stump, the only thing you could possibly see is the lens, which is about 1/4 inch wide. So it's really hidden just about as well as you could possibly hope.
Right.
So we got our fingers crossed for tonight, and tomorrow morning we will find out.
Now, in the beginning of the monologue of the show started, I kind of hinted, Mike, about our time up in New Hampshire and the what happened from the daytime to where you actually said we were all going to go, and you said, no, I'm volunteering. I'm going to go in. I want to be as invasive as I can. You go ahead and tell our listeners about that night with you that you had up there.
Okay, well, the first night there were about 5 or 6 of us all spread out. And you guys had spread bait down maybe 100 yards away. In the woods there, which sloped gently downhill, there was very little underbrush, so you could see quite well. And they had some glow sticks next to the bait, so we could see.
Do we have those little red lights on our heads when we were going into the woods there, Mike?
No. We're not a red-headed light group. Not at all.
We're not the Redheaded Light Brigade. There you go.
We poked our way through the woods down there. We stayed there for hours, and unfortunately, there was a breeze blowing. And when the breeze is blowing, it makes just enough noise so that you can't really, if it was dead quiet, you could hear a stick break, you know, quite a distance away. But with this breeze blowing and the branches crackling and one thing or another, it's a pine forest. It was really hard to hear well. So after about 3 or 4 hours, we called it a night and went home around 1 o'clock. The next night, I decided that I hate to give up on these things. So I took my hammock and I hiked back down there by myself and set my hammock up so that I could look down at the bait. And I had a thermal imaging scope on my rifle and a handheld thermal imager, and I set out these little electronic transmitter alarms that are about the size of a matchbook, and there's a little magnet attached to the side of them, and they're off until you pull the magnet away from the transmitter, and then the transmitter sends out just a little beep like that, just a very quick little signal. So the point being that the transmitter is not on and it's not emitting any electromagnetic energy. So it's just an inert little baby thing that you can you just stick it anywhere. And I attached some very thin thread to three of these things, stretched them around the base, and then went up and got my hammock, guns at the ready, and went to sleep. They will, if these things are tripped and the little beep goes off, it's not an audible beep where the transmitter is, but it sends to the receiver, which is next to my hammock, and these things are made in Japan. And this little sort of Japanese accented voice goes, alert, alert, alert. Well, unfortunately, it didn't go, alert, alert, alert. And it was a nice, quiet night, but reluctantly, I have to say that nothing happened.
Yeah, well, you know, that happens more times than we have, well, we catch anything. That's, you know, like we were all excited when we had that bait gone on that can, you know. And that's the part everybody needs to know about when you're out here looking for this creature. You have to get out. You have to go investigate sightings. And sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're bad. Sometimes you meet people that, you know, were seeing something else. But you have to get on the road. You have to build your leads. And you have to travel across the U.S. and go to their house, talk to these people, see how where they're at, what's going on, investigate the areas, things that were happening. And that's what we do. You know, let me just ask you a question. And I'm pretty sure I haven't asked you this, Mike, since, you know, we've been out on the road here for 3 weeks. Compared to all the other, besides yourself, because I know how you do it like I do it. All the groups that you were with and you went out looking for Bigfoot, are we spot on, or are we doing it like they do it?
No, we're definitely spot on. And I'll take you back maybe 8 years to when I used to go out with the BFRO. And at that time, all they had was the little red lights. And like groups of 10 or 20 people would walk down some forest trail and whoop every so often and whack a tree. And when you have 10 or 20 people walking through the road, not much is going to happen. And it never did. Eventually, when I went, I was the only one that had any night vision or thermal device. So I sort of felt like a rock star here with
star.
All because everybody wanted to use this stuff. Eventually, they got funding and they got a lot of stuff, but people started stealing it, and now there's none left.
Started stealing it. Wow, wonderful. So it's almost like. It was like a sightseeing tour, I'm guessing.
I'm sorry?
It was like a sightseeing tour they were
on. Yes. It was when you get 40 people paying $300 a crack, everybody gets a little headlamp, and everybody gets a radio. And most of these people had never been out in the woods really before. And a lot of them had never even camped at all. So you take all these people and spread them out after they take their little walks. We'd spread them out for hundreds of yards along a forest trail and have them just sit there. And eventually, and this happened almost every time I was on one of these trips, everybody gets kind of hyped up because they've got this little radio and this light and they feel kind of important and they're out there in the dark hunting monsters. And pretty soon, somebody would start to hear something moving in the woods. Well, there's always something moving in the woods. It doesn't mean but you'd hear this voice on the radio thing. I hear them coming. I hear them coming. And then, as whatever it was, a deer or a raccoon or whatever, and the voice would get increasingly anxious, and then finally it would burst into panic, and it'd be my God, they're all around me! Help me! Help me! And they'd burst into tears. And of course, we'd say, okay, now calm down, we'll come get you. And we'd walk down there, and we'd grab this drone man and wipe his tears away, lead him back to camp all shaken. Other time, people would just, they'd hear something in the woods, and they'd get so scared, they'd just run back to camp, jump in their cars, drive away, and you never saw them again. But Squatches never seemed to appear. And if I was Squatch, I wouldn't appear either.
Well said, my friend. Well said. So what do you think about Rhode Island when we were there?
I think the guy had a very active imagination. He lived with his mom, middle-aged guy, and indeed there was the pine woods behind his house did have some scrapings in the pine needles that to the uninitiated they look like footprints. But when you put your foot down on pine needles, it doesn't necessarily scrape pine needles away and leave a footprint. It just presses the pine needles away and off you go. But there were a number of places where pine needles had been scraped down to the dirt that they didn't look like footprints. They looked like sort of crummy rectangles the size of a footprint, but very irregular. And as you said, it turns out that there's a lot of deer there, obviously, and then these things called fisher cats, which apparently abound in that area, and they're scraping around looking for grubs under the pine needles, and that's what was making these marks. So we yep. talked to the guy for a while and decided, you know, this is, you know, thanks a lot, but no thanks.
Well, you know, you have to go to find out, you know, and we
you
did.
Got, if you yeah. don't, if you yeah. don't, it, nothing happens, yeah.
Right, you know, I mean, he was, everything he said was spot on with Bigfoot, you know, until you get out boots on the ground with your team trying to figure it out. Because understand, we go out to debunk, and whatever's left over that we can't explain could be the possibilities, you know. We don't go out looking for the Bigfoot, we're going out to debunk it. And you have to ask a lot of questions, and you have to keep your eyes open, and you have to figure out what's going on. I mean, I remember him telling us on the phone that he was hearing the heavy breathing, and that scared him. Remember that, Mike?
Yes, I do. And I also remember him saying that his motion detector was going on and off in the back of his house.
Yes,
that's right. And frankly, I took a look at his motion detector, and the plastic little piece that covers the motion detecting part of his light was busted wide open, and I don't think that's
yeah.
worked years.
Been a little defective,
but
yeah.
I think he was elaborating a little bit there.
Well, yeah, you know. Well, the breathing, you know, had to have been the deer or whatever the animals were that were once they cleared away or they were using their breath to blow through their nose. Because I've seen a lot of animals do that in the woods. Deer, dogs, you know, horses, they'll put their face down and they'll blow as hard as they can to clear out the area and get whatever they want to eat. And, you know, that's obviously what happened there. And like I said, we love them calls. Call us because we need to come out and find out for ourselves. We will let you know if it's a creature or if you have nothing to worry about. But guess what? Don't worry about it because sometimes you hear things, you get on the internet, you read stuff, your mind gets impressions in it, and you wonder, you try to, remember, the human brain wants to figure it out. So the human brain will try to put something there that says, this is reasonable, this is logical. And that's what we do. We come out, we investigate, we try to debunk whatever's left over, possibility of a creature, and then we start our investigations from there. You know, Mike, Marco,
I'm here.
Marco Bill.
Yeah, yes.
Let's go ahead and cut to a commercial here.
Well, sure, we do that.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
I got to go to the police then. Thank you.
Bigfoot lives a movie at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we're back.
All right. Hey, guys. Okay, so where we leave off. Okay, Rhode Island. Now, you there, Michael?
Yeah.
I'd like to bring Timmy in, and I'd like to have him talk a little bit about casting and the methods of casting, and to give our listeners an understanding of what they can do. So if they want to get out there and they find prints, how they can do it. Timmy, you there?
I am, sorry.
All right. Yeah. Timmy, so I want to explain to the listeners all around the globe here, you know, Timmy is our casting authentication specialist. He is a master caster. He has, I want to say, 20 years, Timmy. Is that saying too much or is that too high?
No, that's even a little bit shy of what I've been doing in the way of casting and making molds and making fiberglass parts. I know a lot about molding and mold making. So, yes, okay. And I know quite a bit about tracking as well.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very interesting place that we're at right now. We are putting bait way up in the air, and it's coming back clean every time. We put out several bananas, and they're disappearing like nobody's business. We have got bait high in the air, at least 10 feet, 9.5, 10 feet in the air. This is an extraordinary deal going on. We can't explain it. I've got an uncanny sense about it. I wasn't quite sure in the beginning, but now I'm becoming a little bit more favored in the idea that there is definitely something here.
Everything's not a Bigfoot until you see it. Why don't you explain to everybody what's making you think that way? And folks, you got to understand, Timmy is probably the most skeptical on our team. For Timmy, it's got to be, I see it, I hear it, I better be able to touch it. For him to make that statement, that's amazing. Go ahead and tell everybody why, Timmy.
Well, honestly, to tell you the truth, I was kind of a little skeptical at first, and because I have had many experiences with casting a lot of prints, I've cast probably 50 prints or more already. There is an uncanny way that this creature seems to be getting around without leaving any prints, and I haven't found any yet, but that doesn't mean they're not out here. There are all kinds of deer in the area. There's probably all kinds of fisher cats. There's other things going on in the area. Who knows? There's a river behind here that's probably about 35 to 40 feet across. And more even so when the rainy season hits here, which is a great traversing area for these hominoids to travel on. We have baited this several times in the last 3 to 4 days or more, and I haven't seen anything like this. This is pretty interesting. Nothing's been touched, but yet all the bait is gone, and it's up high.
You know, I think, you know, it blows my mind. Because I'm thinking that something that was eating it, was eating the peanut butter, was reaching up. If you guys go to our Searching for Bigfoot Facebook page, you'll see pictures of our bait and how it was there and how the fingers were in it. So something had to have been reaching and extending its arm up and smacking to get the peanut butter off the jar to bring it down to its mouth and eating it. And I'm thinking it got frustrated when there was really no more peanut butter on it, and that's why it smacked it hard enough to where it spun around that branch a couple more times. Now, either A, there's giraffes up here in Illinois, and the zoo let one out, and the zoo master didn't know where it's at, or somebody climbed up on a big ladder, but we looked on the ground, and you know there were no dig marks from the ladder edges, you know, disturbing the ground below it, or it's an unknown hominid. You know, the banana disappeared. Well, we couldn't see what did that because it was on the ground, so we all assumed that it might have been a small critter on the ground, but that up there, nothing could have climbed out on the branch. Nothing could have climbed down the string. And nothing would have been able to hang on to that can and eat that butter off, I mean, the peanut butter all off that can. Wouldn't you agree, Timmy?
I would agree. And I just rebaited it now, and the can was licked clean.
And again.
Yeah, again, exactly. And I put up two more bananas. One of them is about 7.5 feet off the ground, which should be fairly easy to get, but I also planted our camera up there in a different place that's kind of hidden, and I'm hoping to get something on that. And then we still have one more camera to place back there as well, and maybe another one after that. We're going to place some different cameras in different places and see what we come up with here. But these creatures have a way of eluding the camera for some reason. I don't know. We can't quite understand it, but they are really slick.
I have to agree with you, Timmy. Now, look, we've been getting emails from folks. They ask a lot of questions, and we'll probably start doing this weekly so that, you know, we can actually help people out. And a lot of emails lately have been, how do you cast a print? How do you cast a print? How do you do it right? What's the wrong ways of doing it? What could happen if I do it in the cold? How do you cast it in the heat? What do you do in the snow down on a rock bed? And since we got you out here, Timmy, I'd like you to take the next 5 to 8 minutes and explain to our viewers the process, what you use, how you mix it, what the temperature is, how you lay it into the mold, what you got to do. Can you go ahead and do that for people?
I sure can. Okay, so one of the toughest to cast in is sand, because sand will fall in on itself. So if you come across a fresh print that's in sand, you need to keep it moist, and I suggest a mister or a sprayer, and keep it in shape so that it doesn't budge its shape. In snow, it's a little bit different. I would say you can't really heat up the plaster of Paris, but if you can keep it warm before you pour it, it will help to keep a better cast. And then, of course, my method for mud is pretty clear. It's when I pour it, I shake it without touching the bottom of the mud to make sure that I don't disturb the print itself with my fingers in there, and make it go to all of the dermal ridges and make it show all of the prints possible in these casts that you can see. There's a metatarsal break sometimes with this hominoid creature that shows that it's in the gorilla or ape family so that it can grab branches. They have a walking gait, depending on their size, of between 5.5 feet and probably maybe 6 feet walking. That is changed to a lot more when running, and the reason that they can travel so far so fast. That being said, sometimes they're running on their toes, so we'll get a toe print. But generally, they put the whole foot down, and they can plant 450 to 500 pounds or more, in excess of 500 pounds sometimes on that footprint. And being a human, you won't be able to impression the ground like they can, or mud. They seem to know when hard ground is better for them to walk on. But they aren't totally aware that they're leaving their prints all the time, and they're pretty sharp creatures. They are able to get in, get out before anybody can sense them, and so that's why it's so important to know how to cast these prints of the creature. I haven't particularly cast any in snow myself yet, but I've cast them in real cold ground. I've cast them in wet sand. I've cast them in mud. And I've cast them in, not rocky area, but more semi-gravelly area, which you don't get a great yield, but you can still get a print out of them. I suggest keeping them moist so that you don't lose the dermal ridges or any prints at all. And then to strengthen them, I also use twigs, stronger oak twigs or something that will that you can put long lengthwise in the print that will hold it together so that it doesn't break when it's pulled.
Kind of like the rebar in the cement.
Exactly. And then I never pull them up from the toes whenever I lift them from the dirt or mud or sand. I always lift them up from the heel, and I wait for them for a good, 25 minutes before I even try and pull them, because I want to make sure that they're totally cured and the plaster is set up. Now that
Do you use your hands to lift them out, Timmy, or how do you do that?
I use my fingers on the heel part of it because there could be hair samples in them. Sometimes they'll drop a hair, or it'll get grabbed underneath a twig and come off. They actually do have hair, some of them, on the bottoms of their feet or close to around the base of their foot. So
I remember you telling me when they were brittle that you can't use your hands, and you taught me how to take that knife and go in underneath it at a 45-degree angle and to bring up the mud.
That's the other way, yes. I was just about to get to that.
Tell me more.
You can.
Thinking about all these old days.
You can come in from the side and get a little bit of mud on them. It doesn't matter. You let the mud dry and then, or semi-dry, and then you can gently brush it off. But you don't want to brush too much because you have dermal ridges and printing areas on the foot that you don't want to be disturbed.
Right. You know, you being out with us, Timmy, and me being with you the first time out and you teaching me how to cast prints, I've never forgotten that, you know, and I remember how important it was, and I paid so much attention, and I was right there on my knees watching you as you did them when we were in Paris, Texas, and God, I want to say there might have been 50 to 100 tracks going off in different directions, like they were having their little playground there, but it was sandy, it was muddy, it was rocky, there was some clay, you know. And I got to learn from the best, you know.
Yeah, thank you. There were also, when we did those prints in Texas, there were some hard mud that, I mean, we tried one of our heaviest persons to put in a print as deep as they had put it in that hard
mud. I remember that. And he jumped up, and I don't want to say it, but he was close to probably 350, 400 pounds. I'm just guessing. And when he jumped up high and came down, it was just a little impression. You're right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. So there's a variance, you know, that, you know, we work with. There's all different methods, but I'm glad that I can open it up and teach it to people so that if they get the opportunity and you're out there searching around and you find something, that you are able as well to cast your own prints, and then you have something that you can show for what you've done. And I also know about faked prints. I know when people make flat samples. I've run across all of that stuff as well, and a different spillane on the toes, and you can tell when they're not deep enough and have been put in with a fake tool. I've seen it all before that people
What's
have made.
What's the number one decisive maker with you that when you see a print that tells you it's fake out there, Timmy?
Well, the main thing that I can tell you, all obvious, is the obvious one of a real flat cast. We've all seen it before. It's just an indent that's no roundness to it, no heel mark, no metatarsal break, no heel that's rounded correctly, and then the arch is not there or present. Even though these creatures are flat-footed, you'll still see a certain amount of an arch in there as well.
Yep.
Their sheer weight and girth makes them distinguish a print in the ground that's unmistakable for me after.
You know, I remember you also, I'm jumping in here because something just came to mind. I remember when you telling me when somebody's made up carvings and they got the two left and the right, the splay of the toes, the prints are exactly the same in every footprint. So that's another marker. I remember that. Yeah.
That's correct. And their feet are definitely not the same. They may be similar, but you will not find that in the normal creatures' prints that we are out casting.
Okay. Hey, Marco, let's go to a commercial and follow that up with the call to all the folks out there to get a hold of us.
You got it.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
Bigfoot Lives, the movie, at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we're back. And I'd like to remind everybody that we need your eyes and ears, folks. If you know anybody or have you heard any Bigfoot sightings, activity, evidence, or stories in all the areas that we're going to be in here, please call TJ, our live capture team leader, at 606-620-6667. That's 606-620-6667. And we'd like to, are you there, TJ? And TJ, are you there?
Try it again. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Awesome.
Gotcha, good.
So we're here in Illinois. We're going to be here until we have our appointment. We actually, folks, we're getting inducted into the Historical Society's Museum in Middlesboro, Kentucky, on Friday at 10 a.m. You can come on by and see us. Come meet with William Trebell, the curator there at the museum. They'll be putting up a nice display for us there. We'll be signing autographs and checking, have videos. And people that are listening right now from the Kentucky area that are close enough, the first 10 people that show up and have a good story that's credible that we can go out and research on, we're going to give you a Bigfoot Live CD absolutely free. The value of it is, I think, $30 online. So that'll be for you free. Just make sure you come out and see us at 10 a.m. at the Historical Society's Museum in Millsboro, Kentucky. Now, we're going to be actually hooking up with our good buddy, Rocky Slavens, the bear wrestler. You out there, Rocky?
I'm here.
Yep. I can't wait to hook back up, buddy. It's been too long.
Oh, I know it. Well, I'm going to be heading out first thing early Friday morning.
Awesome. You know, like I was saying, folks, we're looking for one more team member. If you got a resume and you want to come out with us, want a job, BigfootTJ at Yahoo.com. Make sure you send me your resume. You don't have to know anything about Bigfoot. That's even a plus. Former military, a plus. So come on, send them resumes so I can get them over and see which one lucky person is going to get to come with the Searching for Bigfoot team across the country now for the next 2 or 4 months. So, Mike.
He's right here.
As we're closing up the show, I'd like you to take the last minute and tell people that you're the newest person on the team, what's it like, and why would people want to come and be on our team?
Well, you got to be prepared for long overnight drives across country, 3 or 4 states at a time, stopping at irregular times for meals, go to the bathroom, fill up with gas, arriving at strange places, meeting interesting, sometimes strange people, and investigating strange goings-on, and they don't get much more interesting than this place, I've got to say. How anything could scoop away that peanut butter up there is completely beyond me, unless it's what we hope it is. And we've got thermal, and it's ready. It's running now.
Isn't that the truth? Hey, I'd like to thank our guest, Pam, and for her letting us on her property and looking for the creature. Pam, we're going to find out what it is. And even if we're not here, we got to get to Millsboro. You give me permission to put cameras up and leave them up here and to answer the questions of what's happening here, even though we all know what it is, don't we? But until we see it, we can't see it. Remember, I love this. This is a quote from Michael Green. If in doubt, throw it out. And that's our mantra.
That's our mantra.
So, Marco, Bill, thank you, world. Stay with us. Keep checking up. We're going to be in Middlesbrough, Kentucky. We're moving to Alabama, Mississippi, and then Montana and Utah. So if you got something, give us a call. Send us a Facebook. Send us a text. Give us a jingle. Let us know what's going on. The Bigfoot World, we're out here footing for you. And if all of us got together instead of fighting all the time and bickering about what we're doing and we all worked as a team, we could all probably solve this and share in whatever piece of the pie that comes to us. Well, good luck, and remember, searchingforbigfoot.com, and don't forget, FINRA awarded us that ticker symbol, BGFT. Marco Bill, I'm out.
Okay.
See you next week.
Everybody. We'll see you next week, and keep on Bigfoot and keep the Bigfoot live, folks. Take care.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pact that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and